This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Sunday, March 31st, the final day of March here in 2024. And it is WrestleMania week, officially WrestleMania week. Can you believe it? It's here. The road to WrestleMania concludes 1 week from right now as I record this. It's about 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but in about, for all intents and purposes, 7 days, we will be talking about the conclusions of every match, all of our speculations, all of our predictions, all of the build. We'll find out. We'll find out who's right, who's wrong. We'll find out some turns and things we didn't see. Some surprises. I think we're going to be looking at a hell of a WrestleMania. And since it's WrestleMania week, guys, we're going to be covering WrestleMania wall to wall. You're going to hear predictions throughout the entire week. Obviously, a massive preview and prediction show coming up this week, and you'll get to hear mine later in the week. And I'm interested to hear what your predictions are. I mean, we got a big mailbag coming up this coming week, Wednesday or Thursday, but then Thursday-ish, probably maybe Thursday or Friday at the very latest, Friday morning, we'll be dropping our official preview and prediction show covering every single match in detail for night one and night two. And then with this week being the two-night event, we will have the night one review and a separate night two review. So it's going to be WrestleMania everything all week. For those of you in Philadelphia, if you're going, safe travels, enjoy yourselves. I think it's going to be a memorable couple of nights. I don't care which night you're going. I think both of them will be ones to remember. If I had to pick one night, I would go the second night. Even though The Rock is wrestling the first night, I think there's more to talk about on the second night. But before we get into the week in review, it is WrestleMania week, which means you can get yourself a week for free, including the review shows for free, ad-free, because of the 7-day free trial we have on Apple Podcasts and on Patreon. And if you like us and want to stick with us, I'd encourage you to do so, because we run about 6 shows a week here on the WWE Podcast, and that means there are hundreds and hundreds of shows available to you with no ads whatsoever in any of the shows. So head on over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast or check out Apple Podcast and go ad-free there as well, right on your podcast app. Last night, I dropped a After Dark show, one that was, you know, it had to do with wrestling, but I dove into some other topics that were not wrestling related, you know, some controversial things. And, you know, it certainly is hot topic these days, and I'll leave it at that. And you can check it out if you are on the NXT Plus and above tier on Patreon. It's available to you, or on Apple, it's available to you, those of you that are subscribers. So let's dive into this week in WWE, and let me talk about Jade Cargill first, because we finally get Jade Cargill coming to a brand, finding out where she's landing on a brand, and the storm is here. She's got a gimmick, at least on the surface. She certainly has an entrance. She certainly has a look. And she not only made her her signing public this week with Nick Aldis, but she also got herself involved in a program with Damage Control, as predicted here, and I'm sure others did as well. But it makes sense that Jade is going to be involved in a 6-woman tag team match. I don't know if that's official yet, but let's be honest, it's official. It's official, as Adam Pearce would put it. They all pointed like robots at the WrestleMania sign, and we now have, although it's not official on paper, we have Bianca Belair, we have Naomi, and now we have Jade Cargill versus Damage Control's Kairi Sane, Asuka, and Dakota Kai. And of course, we have Bayley facing Io Sky for the WWE Women's Championship. Let me just say this. It's going to be a very bad night for Damage Control. A very bad, maybe couple of nights, depending on when those women compete, for those two matches. It's going to be a very bad WrestleMania for Damage Control. Bad. Because, you know, here's the thing. Jade Cargill is going to get the victory. Just a matter of against who. You know, I don't think it'll be pinning Asuka. It'll probably be pinning Dakota Kai or Kairi Sane. Probably Kairi Sane, because she's gotten, they've given her nothing to say or do, so she's not going to be hurt by it, because she's a pretty low level right now anyway in the eyes of fans, sadly. So I think Jade Cargill, I mean, early prediction, looks dominant and takes the victory home for her team. I don't know if anything after the match could happen, right? Maybe Bianca Belair attacks Jade and turns heel. Maybe Jade turns heel on Bianca. Maybe nothing happens. But it's going to be an interesting dynamic nonetheless. And yes, a lot of people are pointing out that it's the, you know, the fact that there are three black women, right? Very strong, physically strong black women, right? And hey, it's true. I don't know the last time that there was a faction, if you want to call it that, or even just a team. They're not a faction. A team of this type of women, right? Three black women who are incredibly in shape, incredibly athletic. And that'll be something that'll be pointed out, right? I think it should be mentioned. But here's the thing, you know, I don't care what color you are, red, white, green, yellow, violet, doesn't matter to me, because while that will become a focal point, and it is 2024, which means people focus on race and all that kind of stuff. My lens that I look through this at this through. Which is how I look at all wrestlers through. I don't care whether you're a guy, a girl, black, white, whatever. To me, it's merit. To me, it's what did you accomplish? To me, it's how deep is your character? You know, how good are you in the ring? The stuff that everyone should be measured by and measured by evenly. That's how I look at it. And that's how I'm going to look at it. And I know some people aren't and going to be looking at only the side that the other's three strong black women is on a team. And hey, you're fine. Like, if you want to make that the focal point and make that the whole identity of the group, I think that's a very shallow way to identify them. Right. I've already seen it blow up. I'm not bringing in politics in this. I'm just observing what has been going on Twitter or on X ever since that has happened, and the image of it and all these things. And like, fine, you know, yeah, they're the very three strong, very strong black women. No, you haven't even seen the best of Jade Cargill yet. We haven't even seen anything from Jade Cargill yet, for that matter. But to me, the identity should not be as shallow as the shade of your skin. Okay, it should be based on merit, as everything in every position and every judgment should be. It should be based on your ability and nothing else. Sorry. I know a lot of people might make a bigger deal than it is, but I actually think that's a slap in the face to those women to only look at it through that prism. Like, sure, you want to mention it, fine. It is an interesting fact and one that you don't see too often, right? Visually, it's different, and I have no problem with it, but I want to dig beyond that. While some people stick on that and stay on that and make that their whole identity, I care about what they've accomplished and looking at their resume and what the future could hold and who could feud with who. That's how I look at this through. So there, I just wanted to put that out there. But it's going to be fun, because you're going to look for tension between Jade and Bianca specifically. And you thought Bianca was muscular, and then you see Jade and you're like, yikes. Now, Jade didn't have a whole lot to say. She basically said, I have a new weather report. The storm is here. And she looked confident. She didn't rush her short promo. She didn't overstay her welcome either. And this bled a little bit into my After Dark last night, where, you know, Jade came out and just, I understand she wants to show off her physique. I get it. She does. She's very athletic. She's incredible shape. And good for her. That's awesome. She is a physique among gods and goddesses, right? We understand that. But you can't tell me objectively to look at Jade and go, wow, can we back off the sexuality and actually, you know, talk about what your credentials are to be here? Talk about what your mission is, maybe, instead of having, you know, Bad News Barrett on commentary talk about how his jaw's on the floor and need to pick it up, and he can't stop staring at her, and try to make it respectful, saying, well, in the best way. Wade, there's only one way to stare at her, and that's just to stare at her, because we all know why we're staring at her, right? See, this is what I'm talking about. Even Wade Barrett alluded to it without even knowing he was alluding to it, and that is I'm not a fan of this just acceptance or indifference even to the women who are, you know, who especially post stuff on social media, but now it's bleeding into their wrestling attire. It's just not, I'm not saying it's not appropriate. I am offended. No, I'm not offended. Okay. That's not the point. I just look at it and I go, Jade, you've got more to bring to the table. We've seen the 5,002 pictures you've posted on Instagram. That is literally, to most fans, not all, but most fans, all you have shown us thus far outside of a quick Royal Rumble stint. And it was impressive, and you threw Nia Jax over the top rope, and you looked like a star, and great. But outside of, like, you know, a blink of an eye, the only thing you've got right now to fans, right now, is a look. You have no substance yet. None. And that, I believe she'll come along, and I hope that her in-ring ability matches how much attention they're giving to her physique. But for her physique to be the focal point right now, and that's all they've got, I don't want to hear that, well, they've got to get her in-ring ready. They don't have her in-ring ready, so that they're clearly going to lean on that. Is her mouth broken? Have they forgotten that, you know, even just cutting vignettes, pre-taped stuff, is something that is doable and has been proven effective over the many decades? Do we not want to create any kind of character building until she comes out? Why? So I'm only critical of it because it just continues to prove my point. Even the announcers, Wade Barrett specifically, is doing the very thing that I warned you about. So this isn't me just sitting on my high horse conjecturing and telling women how to dress or whatever weird thing you think I'm trying to do. It's a concern I have that is now being validated and realized on air. So, like, this isn't just me in my mind trying to create a stir and dictating to women how they should act and dress. No, not at all. And you want even more evidence that what I'm saying is not just hot air and just in my own head, and, oh, he's telling women how to be and act, which is, by the way, far from the truth. And I'm actually on the road to continuing to push women's wrestling forward. Becky Lynch has even come out and said that what Rhea Ripley did with the stink face was stupid in so many words, and that this is not good for women's wrestling. She's even said that. I mean, Becky Lynch has come out against that for the very reasons that I have. So good for Becky Lynch. I don't care if this is in character or her just Rebecca Quinn just attacking what Rhea Ripley is really kind of spearheading, whether she knows it or not, with the women's wrestling kind of being inadvertently or purposefully resexualized. And sure, it's not the Attitude Era. Women's wrestling has come a long way, and women can actually wrestle now, and they're not just looked at as Playboy models that occasionally have a pillow fight. But I have a big problem. It's a big problem in the sense that I'm concerned. I'm concerned that women's wrestling isn't going to reach the height it can if, for a predominantly male audience, if you guys forget what men are like, just, you know, ask your boyfriend, ask your husband, go to a local bar. I mean, men are wired, hardwired for visual stimulation. That's how we are made. And when you put these things on TV and you titillate, no pun intended, men with these images, but then tell them you're supposed to take them seriously beyond the sexual nature of it, good luck with that. Good luck. It's going to be, they're creating a problem that doesn't exist right now, and a problem they overcame 10 years ago. And now they're bringing it back, thinking that, well, women can be sexy and powerful. Yeah, they can. Here's the thing. They can. But you know how they do it? the most effectively and what has been proven over the last 10 years to work very well to get women to the main event of WrestleMania, have their own Royal Rumble, have their own Hell in a Cell, have their own Money in the Bank, have their own damn pay-per-view with no men. Remember all that stuff? And I'm only skimming the surface of the accomplishments. You know how they did that? They were powerful first and worried about kicking ass second. Being sexy was a byproduct of what they did. It was something that was not a focal point. It was not a part of their repertoire. It was not a part of their promos or their outfits. It was just something that happened to be present, in addition to the other items that have pushed women forward and actually moved women in the right direction. Like Becky Lynch, who's a perfect example, right? She's not the only one. Charlotte is another one, although her outfits have increasingly over the years become a little bit more scandalous. And hey, but you know, it's not that women's wrestling is going to, I think, crash and burn because it's got so much value behind it and so much equity. But I'm a concerned fan because I have seen and been through the Attitude Era, and I know what women had to overcome to get here. And now I'm seeing those very things that poisoned the women's division in the first place make a return. By the way, the women themselves are doing it. This isn't the company deciding to take a sexualized approach to women now. This is the women themselves deciding to resexualize themselves, whether it's because they want more likes from strangers or validation from strangers, and they like to show off their backside or their front side. And then we're all supposed to not notice that, they're doing this for attention, but at the same time, we're supposed to ignore the fact that we're supposed, you know, that we're supposed to take them seriously in the ring at the same time. It's just, I don't know. I mean, they do what they want. I've got nothing to gain, by the way, from this. I just want to see women's wrestling succeed. But okay, I'm going way off on a tangent. But I wanted to address it because of Jade this week, Becky Lynch's comments, which you can go read for yourself. So this isn't, again, you guys, oh, just making it up. No one else cares. Really? No one else cares, you know, except for the people in the company now starting to talk about it. Yeah, so yeah, I'm certainly the only one. All righty. But beyond that, I am excited, I have to say, for Jade and her debut to see what she can do. That's all. I'll leave it at that. All right, let's keep on rolling on here. There's a lot more to get to. And beyond that on SmackDown, it was nice to have a Rock, Roman, Seth, Cody free night. It really was, because it has been really overbearing at times. And it's not to say we can't, you know, that we're done and sick of it, but it's nice to see what a show looks like without them on it and give the stars that benefited in a big way, like Karrion Kross and the Final Testament, the Street Profits and Bobby Lashley, just as an example, give them time to shine and see what they can do when Rock, Roman, Seth and Cody isn't taking up 55 minutes a show. So it's nice to see what they can do, and we did get, I think, the perfect example of them maximizing their minutes. Now, does that mean that the Street Profits and the Final Testament are going to have a featured match at WrestleMania? I mean, I don't know if that's official, but I could see them at the very least on the pre-show. But let's get into it, as that's a long intro to the show. All right. We get Kevin Owens and Randy Orton versus Pretty Deadly, Kit Wilson and Elton Prince. And this match was quick. It was Pretty Deadly defeating Kevin Owens at just under 7 minutes. And Prince got the cover on Owens for the win. But here's what happened, okay? Because it wasn't just Prince outright beating Kevin Owens, of course. It was Elton Prince getting in the match. Owens landed a big lariat. He followed up with a DDT, covered for a near fall. Owens went up top, but he was interrupted by Kit Wilson. He fought him off and attempted a swanton, but Wilson got his knees up. Orton attacked Wilson on the floor and set him up to suplex him on the announce table. Prince interfered, and then the ref turned his back on Owens. Logan Paul appeared under the ring and KO'd Owens with a brass knuckle punch. See, that's the important part that we didn't talk about here. So those brass knucks make a beloved but also a hated return to take out Owens. And then after the match, Orton was not sure what happened, initially upset with Owens, and he was about to set up Paul for an RKO on the table, Pretty Deadly interfered, and then they threw Orton in the ring, but both of them got hit with a stunner and an RKO. Fine. I had no, you know, this was a match that you would think was set up to make Orton and Owens look dominant, as Kit Wilson and Elton Prince have really done nothing other than just say, yeah, boy, and like one vignette here and there, and really do not much of anything when it comes to putting W's in the, you know, the win column, right? So they got a victory, albeit a very tainted one, fine. But really, this didn't hurt Owens because it's brass knucks. I think it furthered heat on Logan Paul, who scurried out of the arena in his sports car, and as Orton chased him down. So I think it was an effective segment. I don't think anybody was hurt by this, really. I don't think anyone was massively helped. I think it's just WWE at this point ready to get to WrestleMania. You know, I think they're ready. I think we are ready. They're ready. Let's go. You know, there's only one more Raw and one more SmackDown. And it's going to be, I think, two hot shows. Because now after this, they know that there's no other chance to promote the show. This is it. This is it. So they're throwing everything at the wall to get you to subscribe to the network, subscribe to Peacock, or if you're out of the States, subscribe to the WWE Network so that you are able to watch the show and, pay your fee to continue to watch WWE PLEs. And this is their big show, their big moment. These are going to be two massive shows. So this is it. But I know there's a lot of speculation, too, of Orton turning on Owens or Owens turning on Orton. And sure, that's possible. But I don't know if it's likely. I mean, both of them are solidly in the babyface camp. Neither of them feel stale right now. I think they've got more to offer. Both of them have a history of turning heel on a moment's notice, though. So there is a lot of evidence to show both of them turning on their opponents. I mean, my God. I'd like to know the totality of the number of turns, of heel turns, that both Kevin Owens and Randy Orton have had in their careers, collectively. I mean, I would say probably 20 plus that they've turned heel, maybe, between the both of them. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but I mean, it's not big show level, but I think it's pretty substantial. Orton loves being a heel, so I could also see Orton turning. Yeah, I could see that happening, but if he's going to face Logan Paul, obviously he's not going to turn heel until after that match. But all right, let's continue. And let's see, we got Io Sky, who was cutting a nice promo, kind of a Shinsuke Nakamura style. And we got Io Sky saying that, you know, Damage Control outgrew her and she did what she needed to be done to get rid of her. She at one time considered Bailey a friend, and she'll regret that for the rest of her life. And then the director said, yep, okay, that's a wrap. And then Bailey attacked Io Sky, which we all thought was a pre-taped interview. And it might have been pre-taped. I'm not sure if it was meant to be viewed as pre-taped or whatever. It doesn't matter. Bailey attacked her, threw her through the green screen, and it was a nice touch for something different. You know, you don't expect that. Because typically with these pre-taped interviews or how that interview style is done, it's usually in some kind of, you know, undisclosed location. They're in some mysterious place. No one ever attacks. So it was nice. I had no issue with it. And Bailey got the best of EO, but they got pulled apart. And cool. I mean, I think it helped them because there's been too much focus on Dakota Kai, Neo Sky, and, Kairi Sane double teaming, triple teaming, quadruple teaming Bailey. And I think Bailey and Io need to get to them to the one-on-one portion of this. As with really all the title matches outside of Becky, well, really even Becky and Rhea, Becky's been distracted with like 15 opponents. I think if there's one criticism of this year's WrestleMania build, and there's not a lot, so I'm trying to search for them, but if I was to find one, it would be that all of the top championship matches have been very have had a lack of focus with the opponent that they're facing at WrestleMania. I mean, you look at Seth and Drew. Seth has been extremely distracted with the Bloodline and Rock and Roman and Cody. And you have, again, Becky being distracted with Nia Jax and some other opponents, Liv Morgan. you look at the women's side of things with Io Sky and with Bayley. Bayley's been being attacked by every member of Damage Control. There hasn't been a whole lot of one-on-one focus or promo time between Bayley and Io. You know, so and with Cody and Roman, we only started to get the Cody Roman promo. They only started a couple weeks ago, and that even wasn't that effective. I mean, because I don't know, it didn't really work for me. And but that said, they only got so much time now, and they're finally getting to their opponents. I guess that's just one small complaint. Again, it hasn't really hurt everything overall because we know what it's going to be at WrestleMania. But it's just it seems like there's a lack of focus because there's so many other little detours and spiderweb of storylines that these other people are going down. So that's one criticism. But all right. We then, let's see here. We got Jade Cargill, as I talked about. And yes, Jade does look like a megastar. Okay, she does. That's the one thing, you know, for all the criticism I've talked about with the whole sexualization of women and all that, Jade does still look like a megastar. She does look like a star, no doubt about it. But you know, she is a force to be reckoned with. But it's all going to come down to, can she get the job done beyond standing there and posing and oiling herself up and taking selfies and showing off her backside and her front side and being extremely conceited and self-absorbed online? Can you get it done in the ring? You know, she seems like a very big fan of herself, much like Mercedes Moné. You know, like that's a whole nother road I could go down with Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné. There's no one more impressed with Mercedes Moné than Mercedes Moné. I've never, and she had this problem in WWE, never came off appealing to me. Not that she wasn't amazing in the ring and had moments that we'll never forget and had matches that were all-time greats with Bayley and that, yeah, all that, of course. But just her personality and her promos and her presence always had this arrogance. Even when she was on the Steve Austin Broken Skull sessions, had this arrogance about her that was just so off-putting and just... like she just is very impressed with herself, and I never felt just never felt good about it. But doesn't mean you still can't be great. Sometimes I even think there's that's a trait that people who are really great need to have, but it's still to me an off-putting trait. So we'll see if Jade is able to deliver. Time will tell. All right, Street Profits versus Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. Austin Theory and Grayson Waller beat the Street Profits in 6 minutes to join the WrestleMania Tag Team Ladder Match. My God, I think we finally got all the qualifiers. It feels like we've been doing this for 8 weeks to find out how many, what teams are going to be in this six-pack challenge ladder match for WrestleMania for the tag titles. So, fine. We now have the whole field of competitors laid out and complete. We now know who is going to compete for the Undisputed Tag Team titles at WrestleMania. And the Street Profits are not one of those teams. And what happened was there was a distraction caused by caused Ford because of an attack on Lashley backstage by Karrion Kross and his goons. That caused a delay or a distraction. He got rolled up by Theory for the victory. And after the match, AOP attacked the Street Profits, left them laying with the Super Collider. And Lashley tried to intervene, but he was shot down quickly by Cross and AOP and left laying. I mean, at least that's something. If for those of us that have been interested, semi-interested in this matchup, this did get you a little more interested and remind you that this could be a decent program if they actually had consistently focused on it. It just is a lack of consistent focus, mainly due to the fact that Rock, Roman, and Cody and Seth have taken up half the show every week. So it's nice to see, again, talent get an opportunity that you know, otherwise wouldn't if they were on the show. But there's also post-WrestleMania season, guys. Don't forget. You know, post-Mania, I think there's going to be a lot of those faces back when The Rock maybe takes a break and comes back before WrestleMania 41, or maybe he continues. I mean, we don't know. But there's still a lot to be hashed out post-Mania, and we'll get to that, of course, after WrestleMania's over. But let's continue as we got Santos Escobar coming out and says he hates to be the guy that hates to be the guy, but I told you so. He told the audience that he never wants them to forget, especially the kids in Mysterio masks, that he was the one who put Rey on the shelf for months. Dom tries to talk. He gets booed, as he always does, which is quite amazing how long that's lasted. Rey Mysterio's music hits, and he shows up with the rest of the LWO. He told Dom that he truly believed that he was done fighting him, and then Rey said he called having the two men in front of him and said it was divine intervention because now he can beat some respect into both of them. And he issued a challenge for a tag team match between Santos Escobar teaming with Dominic to take on Rey and a partner of his choosing. And he said it would be the newest member of the LWO, Dragon Lee. Crowd didn't know what to do with this because they were chanting for Carlito. And I think it should be Carlito, honestly, because Carlito's the one that had the program with Santos Escobar. Not Dragon Lee. He only really recently entered the whole program. So I think from a star power perspective, I think absolutely it should be Carlito. And the fans were not booing Dragon Lee, just kind of like, huh, really? But you got two luchadors. Maybe Dragon Lee will turn on Rey Mysterio. Well, you know, that's very possible as well. Get a Dragon Lee on Rey Mysterio match. But this ended up with a big brawl between the two factions. The LWO got the better of it and left Legado del Fantasma kind of collect themselves outside the ring. And let's see, we got a new Catch Republic, Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne versus Angel and Umberto. This match was, let's see, I don't see a timestamp, but it ended with the new Catch Republic defeating Angel Garza and Umberto Carrillo to qualify for the WrestleMania Tag Team Ladder Match. I forgot. Okay, there was one more. That's the final in the field. I knew that SmackDown completed the field as a whole, and they are the final team to get into the match. So the New Catch Republic are in the match, which they have exactly negative 5% chance of winning it, but they're in it, and to have a match at WrestleMania is still a big deal. So, all right, let's continue. And we got Styles coming out. He said, AJ Styles, that it had been over a week and an LA Knight champ broke out. He blamed the crowd for Knight showing up at his house. And he said he should have locked him up so he missed WrestleMania, but he has bigger plans for him. He said he was going to embarrass him for the trash that he is. And Styles claimed to know what LA Knight would, that he would show up there tonight. And he's looking for him through the crowd or down the aisle. Is he a cameraman? And Styles was messing with the cameraman, bullying him. And someone came in the crowd and was grabbed by security, but it was actually LA Knight to be one of the ring crew. He was dressed up very convincingly as part of the ring crew, and he attacked Styles, and Styles escaped through the crowd. Knight grabbed the microphone and said he would show the whole world whose game it is when he defeats Styles at WrestleMania. So cool. This program has been just fine. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way or kind of a backhanded way. Did I expect more from Knight at WrestleMania in terms of a title match? I was hoping for a U.S. title match. But working with one of the world's greatest pro wrestlers, a guy that has a hell of a lot of name value, AJ Styles, is not a bad gig either. And it's a one-on-one versus being in some kind of multi-person match for a title. One-on-one match at WrestleMania kind of says that you've made it, you know? So this is just fine. Again, it sounds like I'm ho-hum about it, but it's good. It's just fine. I don't know what other words to put in place of it. All right, we got a vignette for Tiffany Stratton where she talked about the burdens of perfection and introducing everyone to what Tiffy Time is all about. And back in the arena, we get Bianca Belair. So they're kind of taking a pause here on Tiffany Stratton. Clearly plans for her or at WrestleMania or likely post-Mania. All right, so we've got Dakota Kai versus Bianca Belair in the main event. And the finish was Bianca Belair beating Dakota Kai in 9 minutes and 39 seconds. Belair ended up landing a forearm strike. Dakota Kai shut her down with a scorpion kick, and she attempted a running kick. Bianca avoided it. And Belair then put Kai back into the ring with a deadlift suplex, and both women were down. Bianca ended up landing a spear and the KOD and got the victory. And so Bianca wins. And then after the match, they get beat down. And of course, that's when the Naomi and eventually Jade Cargill come out to even the score. And it's going to be a six-woman tag team match. You know, I think that's, while it's not official, there's no other option, really. I mean, that's the story they've been building to week after week. You know, originally it was just Bayley getting beat down, and then Naomi comes to her help, and she gets beat down, right? And then Jade Cargill comes out, and it's been like one person progressively trying to even the odds here with Damage Control, and I think they finally found it. Yeah, and Bianca Belair getting involved. Like, so it went from Bayley by herself to Naomi helping her to then convincing Naomi convincing Bianca Belair to help, and Bianca Belair gets involved, and then it's Jade Cargill as the final boss, so to speak, being the final really puzzle piece to that six-woman tag team match. You know, and it's also, some people look at this as, well, Naomi is, or rather, not Naomi, but Bianca Belair is having a fall from grace. But you know what? Bianca Belair doesn't need to be in the main event or in a singles match every single year. She's a hell of a talent. And sure, it is a step down. It just is. I'm not going to pretend it's not. But if this is building to something bigger with Jade Cargill, then bring it on. You know, as I've said over the last several weeks, WrestleMania isn't the end all be all. There are days beyond WrestleMania. There always are. Even though WrestleMania feels like, oh my God, if we don't do it by WrestleMania or at WrestleMania, it'll never happen. No. Like, of course not. You don't want to, you can't physically do everything you want to do at WrestleMania. It's a big destination. It's a big mile marker. But it just rolls into the next PLE and then the next one. And then it's SummerSlam. And then all of a sudden it's Survivor Series and then Rumble. And then, oh, here's another WrestleMania. It's just the way it goes. You know, so we can't get everything we want at WrestleMania, even if it's WrestleMania 40. Not everything you want, every dream match that we think we should have is going to happen at this event. And I think at times we need to remind ourselves of that as fans. It's a two-night event, sure. But I wouldn't want everything that I could dream of in one night. As Vince McMahon has famously said, you always have that ace, and you have to have that ace in your back pocket. And I think that WrestleMania for Jade Cargill and for Bianca Belair and for maybe others that we don't see coming, it's going to be a setup for a future match. It's not just the end game for everyone and everything. You know, WWE isn't going out of business. This isn't their final show, you know? So I think it's just an important point that I'd like to stress as we get into and close to WrestleMania now. All right, so that was Raw. SmackDown. Let's talk a little bit about Monday Night Raw. And that was, if you didn't remember, in a place called Chicago. I think I pronounced it right, finally. But maybe they need to. The problem is they didn't say it enough, so I couldn't get a correct pronunciation. So I think I finally figured it out. I think it's called Chicago. I don't know. One of the two. It's right. But all right, I'm being an ass. Let's move on. Just a quick recap of Raw for the matches that took place. Cody and Rock obviously headlined the whole thing. I don't need to dissect the beatdown. Everyone has dissected it into a fine powder, including myself. So I'm not going to really go over that again. And the final boss and Cody bleeding, all brilliant stuff. So I'm going to kind of skip by that because there's not really much more to add to it other than interesting to see what Cody's reaction is this week, which should be just attacking the Rock. We got the first match of JD McDonagh versus Ricochet, and that match was longer than expected at 14 minutes, and Ricochet beats JD McDonagh. CM Punk comes out. That's when things got really fun with Drew McIntyre and with Seth Rollins, and it eventually landed with CM Punk taking a commentary role during the world title match on night two with Seth and Drew McIntyre, which is going to be a fun little dynamic. You know, how does CM Punk interject himself? Does he? Maybe he waits till after the match, but he's not there to just do commentary. Of course, there has to be something, you know. Maybe here's what I'm thinking. Perhaps he's wearing underneath a referee's shirt on whatever he's going to wear, so he's actually he's doing commentary, but during the match the referee gets bumped, and we need a new referee, and CM Punk ends up coming in the ring and counting the three for whoever's down, and maybe has to award Drew McIntyre the title. I mean, I don't know. I'm just spitballing. Okay. But that was a fun segment. I mean, having Seth Rollins and Punk go face-to-face gets you excited for when Punk eventually comes back. And there's a lot of feuds with Punk. Punk essentially named four guys that he's going to have match with at some point before his career is over. Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins, The Rock, and I think eventually Cody Rhodes. And I think Cody Rhodes and CM Punk are going to cross paths before the night is over, or before his career is over. So, all right. We got, after that, that was a massively long segment. Candice LeRae versus Ivy Nile. Boy, not a good place for this match to be, because not only is it a minute and 50 seconds, but it's also after a really hot segment with Rollins and Drew and CM Punk. Not good. I'm sorry, no one really cared. It's really difficult to care when the WWE tells us we shouldn't care by giving these women a minute to wrestle. I mean, just it's pitiful. But the next match was New Day, which was Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods versus Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, DIY. And this match was a lot of fun. You know, it ended with the New Day getting the victory and leaves you wondering where DIY is going to be. But, you know, I don't hate the New Day in this match. You know what they bring to the table, and they are a bigger stars than DIY. So, all right. We got Andrade versus Giovanni Vinci. That was 7 minutes and 10 seconds with Andrade beating Giovanni Vinci. And then we got Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch in their confrontation. Becky Lynch did kind of hit back on Rhea Ripley for just posting her ass on the internet. And Rhea Ripley just really tore into fans and just said, I do it because I know I'll get attention, essentially. I do it because the fans will respond the way I know they're going to, like sheep. I mean, which I think she actually believes, you know. But, all right. Sami Zayn and Chad Gable had a backstage interview or a backstage altercation, and they continue to have friendly competition, but also have Chad Gable be a little bit stern with Sammy, making you wonder if Sammy's going to turn heel, or rather Chad Gable's going to turn heel, or still somehow find a way into the match tomorrow night on Raw. All right. This is Sami Zayn versus Bronson Reed. Sami Zayn beats Bronson Reed. I'm sorry, Bronson Reed defeats Sami Zayn in 9 minutes and 35 seconds. And let's see what else we got. What was the main event here? Jey Uso versus Shinsuke Nakamura, with Jey Uso beating Shinsuke in 7 minutes and 30 seconds. And then, of course, the end of the match, end of the show, was a what felt like an 8 minute long beatdown on Cody Rhodes by The Rock. So, certainly no lack of things to talk about, and there will be no lack of things to talk about this next coming week with the final go-home shows for Raw and SmackDown. I'll be interested to see if they call it WrestleMania Raw or WrestleMania SmackDown. I hope they don't. But that will be those will be two hot shows. And then coming up, of course, WrestleMania. We got the Hall of Fame Friday night, WrestleMania Saturday night, night one, night two on Sunday night, which will be a whole lot of fun. And I think they're going to be talking about this WrestleMania for quite some time. Yeah, I really think that with Triple H fully in charge, this is going to look and feel different, as he has really shown over the last several months. It's not a 180, or rather a 180 is the right term, but it has been slightly different. Tweak things here and there. Don't blow up the formula. Don't, you know, set the world ablaze. Just tweak a little thing here, a little thing there, this production piece, that production piece, showing them arriving to the arena, which is, I think, a nice touch. Attacking during a pre-taped interview that you didn't think was coming. Certain camera angles you didn't think that existed now exist. Just little things like that, you know, that just, oh, wow, that's new, that's different. Makes a big difference. And I've really appreciated those things. So That'll do it for me, guys, on this Week in Review. Again, if you want to go ad-free, patreon.com/WWE podcast is the place to go. You can also head on over to Apple and get yourself an ad-free experience over on Apple, because Lord knows we don't like those commercials. So you can get rid of them very quickly and easily. 7-day free trial available to you on Apple and on Patreon. So consider joining us there. Again, huge week coming up, guys, on the show. Wall-to-wall coverage of WrestleMania. Lots of in-between stuff. I mean, mailbag and, yes, of course, the Raw review and some other things that we'll cram in, and maybe some video for patrons. And I think you guys will enjoy it. Big week coming up, guys. It's here. Our Super Bowl of wrestling is only 1 week away. 6 days, actually. So thank you, everybody, for joining me. Take care. I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show. Or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.